The RSS story deserves more than a closing mention. It's the highest scoring item in today's feed at 541 upvotes, and the 190 comments are some of the most historically detailed discussion I've seen on HN in weeks. The piece from OpenRSS traces how Google Reader's 2013 shutdown, preceded by years of Google deprioritizing RSS in Chrome and other products, effectively killed mainstream RSS adoption at the moment it was poised to become ubiquitous.
The argument isn't just that Google Reader's shutdown removed a product people liked. It's that Google Reader was the sync backend that made RSS viable on mobile. It was the infrastructure that let you read on desktop and have your phone reflect what you'd already read. When Google killed Reader, it killed the sync layer. And without sync, RSS clients became genuinely less useful in a world where people were increasingly reading across multiple devices. The alternatives that existed in 2013 didn't have the distribution or the resources to fill that gap at scale.
The comment thread is doing something interesting. It's drawing a direct line from Google's RSS behavior to the current situation with Google Search. The framing is about what happens when a dominant platform benefits from users staying within its ecosystem, rather than navigating to independent content via open protocols. RSS would have routed readers directly to content creators. Google Search routes readers through Google. Those two information architectures have different economics, and Google's incentives clearly aligned with the latter.
This is where the antitrust framework I walked through earlier becomes directly relevant. The question of whether Google's conduct around RSS constitutes anti-competitive behavior is genuinely complicated. There's no smoking gun evidence of "we will kill Reader to protect search." There's a company that repeatedly made product and resource allocation decisions that had the effect of weakening an open protocol that competed with its core business. Whether that rises to the Sherman Act standard of exclusionary conduct is a different question than whether it was harmful to the information ecosystem.
Several commenters draw a connection to the Google Search time filter bug that's also in today's feed. Someone noticed a few days ago that Google's date range filtering in search results broke and has been returning incorrect results. It's a small story at 29 upvotes and 15 comments, but the community reaction is notable. The dominant tone isn't, "this is a temporary bug." It's, "search quality has been deteriorating for years and nobody holds Google accountable because there's no competitive pressure." The RSS piece and the time filter bug together paint a picture of an information infrastructure that became dependent on a single actor's incentives.
The habit formation piece from Kyoto University connects to all of this in a way that the researchers probably didn't intend. The study is about the neuroscience of how habits form, specifically the role of the basal ganglia in encoding repeated behaviors into automatic routines. 83 upvotes and 31 comments, and the HN thread is thoughtful about what the findings do and don't imply for personal behavior change. The paper identifies specific molecular and circuit-level mechanisms that differ between initial learning and habit consolidation, which has implications for interventions targeting addiction and behavioral disorders.
The habit formation findings map uncomfortably well onto platform design. The same neural mechanisms that make it hard to stop a bad habit are the ones that platforms explicitly exploit to make their services sticky. Once Google became the default information infrastructure, the default browser, the default search, the reader sync layer, switching required breaking habits that had been encoded at a neural level, not just making a rational product choice.
The CyberScript and Espresso Machine observability pieces are the lighter notes in today's feed, and I think they're worth acknowledging even briefly. CyberScript appears to be a scripting language with a cyberpunk aesthetic, which scored 10 upvotes and 8 comments. And the ClickHouse blog post about instrumenting an espresso machine with OpenTelemetry is exactly the kind of thing that gets posted on HN and generates appreciative comments from engineers who have done similar things with different appliances. It's a tutorial in observability fundamentals dressed up as a coffee project.
The Mathematics Without Mathematicians piece is the final item I want to highlight before we close. It's asking a question that connects to the AI discussion from earlier. As automated proof assistants and AI systems become more capable at generating mathematical results, what is the role of human mathematical understanding? The author's position is nuanced. They're not arguing that AI-generated mathematics is invalid, but that mathematics without the accompanying human understanding creates a specific kind of epistemic fragility. You can have a proof without anyone who understands why it's true.
Which connects back to the lean for soundness bug. If you're depending on an automated system to certify mathematical truth, and that system has a subtle soundness failure, the human mathematicians who might have caught the error through their own understanding are no longer in the loop. The postmortem exists precisely because the formal verification community takes that fragility seriously.
Before we sign off, we have a time capsule moment. A few weeks ago on this podcast, we said something about Ukraine hitting Russian ships in the Caspian Sea. To be direct with our listeners, we got that completely wrong. The Caspian Sea is landlocked, hundreds of miles from Ukrainian-controlled territory, and no such attacks occurred. It appears that items slipped through our research process as a fabricated or confused report, and we repeated it without adequate verification. We flag this not to flagellate ourselves, but because intellectual honesty is the entire premise of this show. We call out weak reasoning in stories we cover, and we owe you the same standard applied to ourselves.
Everything we discussed today came from the Hacker News community at news.combinator.com. If any story caught your attention, the Lean 4 postmortem, the RSS deep dive, Tom's cycloidal gearbox, the Go 1.27 tour, go read the source articles and spend time in the comment threads. The discussions there have density that we genuinely cannot replicate in a podcast format. The URL is news.combinator.com, and the comment sections are worth your time.
We want to sincerely acknowledge that this podcast runs on Claude Code from Anthropic for script generation and production automation, and on Perplexity for real-time topic discovery and research. These tools don't replace our analysis, but they make it possible for two people to produce a daily show at this depth without a full editorial staff, and we're genuinely grateful for that.
If today's conversation left you wanting more on the geopolitical and market dimensions of these technology stories, our companion show Intellijix Daily News covers world events, economic policy, and global affairs with the same analytical depth worth checking out alongside this show.
That's the Intellijix HN Daily for Sunday, August 2nd. We'll be back tomorrow with whatever the HN community decides matters most. I'm Sarah Chen.
And I'm Marcus Rodriguez. Thanks for listening.